Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Waiting for Doom. It's the Doom Patrol podcast for the comic that doesn't come out at the moment. So we're going back in time and looking at all the Doom Patrol comics that have come out over the years.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can always reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on our Facebook page, Waiting for Doom. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And you can also talk to our show account, Wilfred, who's sentient, at WFDPod.
Yes, and this week we're having a bit of a different look at the Doom Patrol. We are going to be looking at some of the issues from the Teen Titans Go, and we're very lucky to have joining us this week the writer of those stories, Mr. Jay Torres.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here, Jay.
My pleasure.
We've been really surprised by how much you have written at Doom Patrol over the years. There's quite a few comics where you've slipped them in here and there and really focused on them a lot, actually. Mm.
I did my best to try to sneak them into the work that they would let me do that in. you know, short of getting my hand on the series or a miniseries of any kind, this was basically the best I could do. And mind you, the Johnny DC line, which is the all-ages line over at DC, mm-hmm. was the easiest to do that in because they kind of left us alone. So editorially, my editors were great about it, and they were fans of Doom Patrol as well. They're no longer with DC, but they all love the Doom Patrol, and so they let me do what I did. And I did try other series. For example, the Legends of the Dark Knight, I did a couple of stories for them, and I tried to see if I could include even just Robot Man or Beast Boy somehow, but they never let me do that. Or even I pitched some stories for the Wonder Woman Sensation series that was last year. I tried to do a Wonder Woman Doom Patrol story.
That would have been fantastic.
Just any opportunity I got to pitch it. Even the Legion of Superheroes in the 31st Century, which was based on the cartoon. Uh-huh. We tried to do some kind of alternate reality spin there, but it didn't work out in the end. So, you know, I'm a big enough Doom Patrol fan that I wanted to try to kind of incorporate them in different titles, regardless of what the focus was. But there was always a connection. You know, you could always find a connection.
Mm, well, that's fantastic. Wow.
Well, we might come back to your Doom Patrol work in the Doom Splaining segment, but right now we usually talk about the week in comics. So, how was your week in comics, Jay?
You know, we just celebrated Easter here, and we didn't really, I didn't do a lot of comic book reading other than some stuff with my kids. I started rereading some Incredibles comics with them over the Easter holiday. But other than that, you know, working in comics, I'm always writing. So holiday or not, I was working on some new stuff that I think we can talk about later, right?
Oh, yes, please. I'm very excited about what's coming up from you, sir.
Oh, thank you. But you guys do talk about, I don't know if I'm skipping ahead a bit here, but you guys do talk about Doom Patrol mentions in the comics sphere in the last week, right?
If we spot them, we do.
Yeah. Yeah, on the Doom Clock, yeah, we report in if they've had any recent activity, so yeah.
Right. So look forward to that. And also, you mentioned that you were going to be talking about Rebirth.
Yes. So Rebirth really dominated the news this week and sort of took the focus away from that terrible movie that came out.
have you guys seen it yet? Sorry to...
So you've seen it, Jay?
No, I haven't. I've been putting it off.
I think I enjoyed it a bit more than Paul did. I did think it was a good film, but there were certain scenes that were edited in weird places for my liking. And I'm not in any great rush to go out and see it again, whereas I know other people are. So I'll gladly buy it when it comes out on Blu-ray. But yeah, I thought it was okay. I thought it was okay. Whereas Paul...
they got Batman completely wrong. They got Superman completely wrong. And everyone loves Wonder Woman because they didn't really do enough to stuff her up. That's my opinion.
But how did you gents feel about Man of Steel?
I think it actually looks pretty good compared to Batman versus Superman.
Wow.
Really?
But I can't stand Jonathan Kent in that. I think he's like, it's a really wrong-headed view of him.
And I hated the way they you know, killed him.
Yes. Yeah. Like, he commits suicide basically to keep his son in the shadows, and it's
dumb. Pretty ridiculous and against the grain of, you know, Superman and how Jonathan Kent's been portrayed in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a real resistance in these movies to just letting Superman be truly heroic. Seems to be this whole, we have to show him with feet of clay and compromise him and, you know.
Right. It's almost as if they take the name Superman ironically.
Yeah. And they beat it over the head that he's an alien. He's not one of us. He's an alien over and over again. So, right.
I not to spoil, don't spoil any of the cameos that have already been talked about. But with this whole Justice League thing, no mention of the Doom Patrol or even Nas Calder or anything like that. No way.
No. Superheroes are pretty sparse in this movie universe. There's not many of them.
But not even a mention, because, you know, in the Avengers movies and all the Marvel movies, there are all these, you know, Easter eggs, and you'll see, you'll have mention of Roxxon and the Baxter Building and, you know, whatnot. That gives you a glimmer of hope that somewhere down the line.
Nope, no. None of that at all.
No, you need the DC TV universe for that stuff at the moment.
Yeah, hopefully.
Anyway. So I've got a printout here of all the Rebirth announcements that came out. So I don't know if we want to go through the whole thing, but, have you looked at these, Jay? Mike?
I've looked at some of the things that were tweeted out by people on my feed. So I don't know the whole line, but I do know about some of them.
Mm. Yeah, well, cherry picking my highlights, I'm very happy to see Greg Rucker coming back to Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. He's a very good writer, and I talked to him in September last year, and I'm really surprised he's coming back. So they must have done a lot of reassuring that they wouldn't interfere, because he wasn't a happy man a few months ago.
No. Yeah. For me, there's maybe half a dozen I'm completely sold on. The two Green Lantern books, Detective Comics, no surprise there. Justice League, of course. Trinity, I'm keen to see what they do there. And yeah, Wonder Woman as well. Not so much the newer stuff like the Super Sons book and the new Superman who's based in China. I kind of want more information on those before I dive in. But yeah, I'm happy with what they've given us so far. So yeah.
I'm quite a big fan of Tom King. So seeing him on Batman's great news.
I've kind of got my eye on the Titans book for obvious reasons, and I'm wondering what kind of origin they're going to give Beast Boy. I'm still unsure whether or not this whole thing is a reboot or a retooling revision. They keep saying it's not, but
yeah,
I'm not sure. What is it, a multiverse thing again?
Well, there has to be some continuity shift because Superman has now got a son with Lois, which is going back to Jeff Johns' run he did with Richard Donner, isn't it?
Yes. Now, I wonder if – I mean, there haven't been any mentioned of different Earths, but I wonder once the books come out, we'll start seeing, oh, this one takes place on Earth 2, this one takes place on Earth 12, and so on.
Yeah. Well, I've heard mentioned that, yeah, the JSA are coming back, but not right away. So it wouldn't surprise me if they put them back, you know, back on Earth 2. But, yeah, we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, they emphasize legacy so much in the conversations about it all. So,
well, that bodes well for, you know, Beast Boy and Doom Patrol connections.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I should say this, but mainly because I don't want to jinx it, but I have spoken to an editor at DC, and I've tried to pitch a Doom Patrol related book, and I met with them last summer, and at the time, he kind of had to put me on hold because of something that was going on. Now I know it's this, you know, shakeup as it were.
Uh-huh.
I had to sort of wait till the dust settled and see where things go, and there were different plans. I mean, I will say that it is a Titans related book, but I guess you can guess what kind of connection I would draw there. And essentially it was, you know, let's wait and see how this big, I can't remember how he phrased it, but this big new thing is going to work out, and stay in touch and, you know, keep reminding me about this pitch you want to present. Huh. So I'm definitely going to be, you know, keeping a close eye on this stuff and going back there to, potentially, you know, at least pitch this thing and then see how far I can take it.
Nice. Yeah.
We've had the Bleeding Cool rumors about Doom Patrol coming back with Gerard Way and Betty Cloonan working on it as a Vertigo book. So that's the latest rumor we've heard. But definitely DC are circling a Doom Patrol book from what we've heard behind the scenes.
Yeah. This is, well, I don't know if it can fit into. Essentially, it's more of a Beast Boy book,
okay.
But because it is Beast Boy, initially I wanted to pitch kind of a Wonder Years with Beast Boy in the Dayton Mansion, or basically.
Ah, that would be awesome.
So, if there's a way to kind of work that in as a mini series. Whether it bridges, you know, whatever plans they have with the Titans and the Doom Patrol. I mean, I'm willing to sort of sit down and just figure out a way to get it to be done.
Wow.
But again, I mean, not to jinx it, I hate talking about stuff that I'm still pitching because I'm kind of superstitious about stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it happens, you know, obviously you'll hear about it first and I'll come back on the show and push the heck out of it.
That'd be good.
But yeah, so they're waiting for the dust to settle on Rebirth, and you know, fingers crossed that there's a way to kind of slide in there and even do like a mini series.
Wow, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's an idea I've had for a while. I actually, you can see kind of seeds of it in the Titan stuff that I've done.
Mm.
And of course, it wouldn't skew as young. It would be more mainstream DCU. And you know, a focus on sort of a classic side of things.
Cool.
Mm.
Wow.
But my interpretation of all this Rebirth stuff, it seems to be the editorial fingerprints I'm seeing on it seem very writerly rather than you know, commercial. So they seem to be giving writers a lot more play, and certainly getting Christopher Priest on Deathstroke is, you know, it's a big surprise and one that would be very interesting. He's a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I'll probably try. I think there's about 8 or 9 that I'll try, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how much do you guys know about any kind of Doom Patrol that might be coming out of this?
Nothing really, other than the
rumors about Gerard Way and
yeah, that's right. Pretty much all we're aware of. Yeah,
I would read a Gerard Way Doom Patrol book.
Yeah,
in an instant. I loved Umbrella Academy, so that would be something I'd. And I don't know if you guys read Umbrella Academy.
Yep, it's great.
Yeah, so apparently that was inspired by Morrison's Doom Patrol. So
it's very similar.
It'd be a nice way for everything to kind of come full circle for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, is that ticking that I hear?
That is ticking, and it can only be the Doom Clock. Okay, so looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that No big surprise, but the last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run. Cover date of July 2011 and on sale May 4th that same year. So it's been 4 years and 47 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. So we're getting even closer to the 5-year anniversary. Oh, God. The last appearance of the team was just over 8 months ago in All-Star Section 8, number 3, with them in a big splash page of all the Justice League type heroes, and also in Justice League United number 12 with Stargirl recruiting Robot Man for her team's next mission. But this week in Doom Patrol history, we take a fond look back at Paul's favorite run of the Doom Patrol from the John Byrne era. So back in 2005, for $2.50 American, we had the release of issue 10 of that volume, which featured Chief helping Metamorpho regain control of his powers going crazy. But the main feature of the story, we actually got to see the secret origin of everyone's favorite four-armed gorilla, Grunt. And unsurprisingly, it was not a happy origin. Poor Grunt.
Right. Have to read that one day, won't I?
Yes, you will. You will. We will get to those issues one day. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
This week on Doom Splanning, we're going to focus on Jay Torres and all the work that he's done. But Jay, why don't you tell us how you got started in comics?
I kind of consider my semi-official start in comics back in the third grade, where I drew and wrote my own comic strip for the school paper.
Nice.
That kind of, it got really great reviews, so to speak, and the good kind of attention from everybody. And I remember thinking that there was something to this, that this might be something I want to pursue or you know, at least keep doing for fun, if not pursue as a career. Although in the third grade, I'm not sure I quite understood what careers were and, you know, that you had to make money to consider it a career. Mm-hmm. But sometime in college, in the early 90s, I went to school at McGill University in Montreal. And in Montreal, there was quite a vibrant mini comic and indie comic scene going on. Okay. And there were all these guys like Chester Brown and Seth doing these sort of autobio comics at the time. Mm-hmm. I decided to do one myself, and I teamed up with a friend from high school, and we did a comic called The Copybook Tales, which was basically about two guys growing up in the 80s, and we would flash forward to the 90s when they were trying to break into comics. So it was very much about us, but at the same time it was fictionalized, and you know, we heightened the comedy of it. The interesting thing about that book, we basically published mini comics, which were photocopied and hand stapled and folded, okay, you know, little homemade comics.
Yeah.
Some people call them zines, I guess. Mm-hmm. And we would sell those on consignment at various stores in Montreal and Toronto area. Sometimes we would do mail order for like $1, if you can imagine that you can buy any kind of comic for $1 these days. But the best part of that is that we would send to different companies, different small press publishers. Actually, we were kind of naive, and we sent them to even bigger publishers in the hopes that they would, you know, garner some kind of attention. But the good thing was, and this is, well, you know, this is the sort of positive spin on all of that, is that some of the people who read the comic and were fans of this little, you know, homemade kind of very, very rough and rudimentary kind of comic, including people like C.B. Cebulski, who would later become an editor at Marvel, or Dave uh-huh. Roman, later become an editor at DC. He interned at DC, but then became a editor at Nickelodeon, and Jamie Rich, who became an editor at Oni and Dark Horse, now at DC. So we made fans out of comic book readers who then sort of climbed the ladder at different publishers and eventually would give us work.
Nice.
So it's sort of like, pardon me, being in a band and playing locally and somebody nearby becomes, you know, a big promoter someday, or yeah, being on a small TV show regionally and then going, you know, national later because someone, you know, someone at the network saw it or whatever. So, you know, let that be a lesson to anybody who's aspiring to be in comics. You know, start small, mm-hmm. And build your audience, and you never know who you'd make a fan from, you know, out of.
Yeah.
So that's basically how I got started. And that mini comic, you know, got me my first deal at Oni, which was for Alice and Dare, another all ages book, which then led me to Marvel to do some freelance there on X-Men Ronin miniseries and Black Panther, which led to me working at DC. You know, that it took a good 5 years to get to a point where I was actually making enough money to do the work full time. But, you know, by that time, I was writing no matter what. Whether I had a day job as an ESL instructor, but I would go home at the end of the school day, the school day, and just write until the wee hours of the morning, uh-huh. and try to sell my writing. So that's basically how I got my start.
Wow, that's awesome. So I'm curious about when you first discovered the Doom Patrol, because it sounds like you've got quite a vested interest in them, not just from the Beast Boy connection in Teen Titans Go, but you've obviously got a bit of a love there for the team in general.
Mostly the Silver Age team, the 60s team. Mm-hmm. But later, around the same time that I was just breaking in, this was around the same time that Morrison's Doom Patrol hit. So I had kind of lost interest in comics as a reader, at least in terms of like the superhero stuff, like in the late 80s, early 90s. But I still had a love for a lot of the stuff I read in the 80s, which included reprints from the 70s and the 60s. My first Doom Patrol comic, I believe, was a DC Blue Ribbon Digest.
Oh, wow.
That's how I discovered the Doom Patrol. And then later, in the early 80s, I discovered New Teen Titans. And, you know, of course, they folded them into the continuity then. Mm. So that era, you know, 60s to the 80s, is probably my favorite. And then I rediscovered comics in the – I shouldn't say comics. I mean, I always read comics, but – different types of genres. But I rediscovered superhero comics, I guess you could say, in the 90s because of people like Morrison, you know, Alan Moore, all the Brits who sort of who reimagined a lot of, you know, DC guys that I used to like. So I've always had a soft spot for the Silver Age Doom Patrol, that time in my life where I could go to the corner store and buy these Blue Ribbon Digests for like a dollar.
Wow.
And they'd have, I want to say, anywhere from half a dozen to 10 stories in one digest for about a buck.
Whoa. And
my favorites were the best of. So there was best of 1985, 1987, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they have a sampling from the entire DC line. So even though I couldn't find those individual comic series, because of newsstand distribution, it was very random, and if you're lucky, you got, you know, a series in a consecutive, you know, consecutive months in a row. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of holes in my collection because just whatever showed up is what I got.
Yeah.
But Blue Ribbon Digest introduced me to series that I didn't even know existed. Of course, I didn't know until later that I was reading reprints. Some of these series were already dead.
Yeah.
By decades, but I had no idea. And I still remember the cover of the Doom Patrol one. I remember the first Doom Patrol story I read. And there was just something about the team that I really liked. I had a thing for team books, team superhero books.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And here was another one that kind of, another superhero team that really stood out. You know, the Justice League, the Avengers, Justice Society, they're basically mirror images of each other. But then comes, you know, Titans, the New Teen Titans, and the Doom Patrol that kind of stood out from everybody else because of how different they were.
Who's your favorite character in the Doom Patrol?
Oh, that's hard. you know, when I was a kid, it probably would have been Robot Man. But I have a soft spot for Rita as well.
Excellent.
But then if we go to the Morrison era, it's probably Crazy Jane.
Uh-huh.
And most people think it's Beast Boy, but I kind of think of Beast Boy like, you know, kind of, he's sort of more, to me, he's more of like a secondary character in the Doom Patrol, obviously.
Yeah.
And more of a star in the Teen Titans. So I don't really consider him a Doom Patrol character more so than a Titans character.
Yeah, the Titans have really owned him lately. So, you know, it's
Yeah.
You'd see him over and over again without any connection to the Doom Patrol generally. So.
Yeah, and he's been in pretty much every iteration since the New Teen Titans, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There may have been one, I think it was the J. Ferber Titans, where it was just the original Titans grown up, but then after that it would be, you know, some kind of configuration with him in it.
Yeah. And he seemed to stay, his age seems to have fluctuated over the years. Like he's gone from being a sort of semi-adult to back to a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. They can't seem to settle on how old he is. But yeah, so those early, well, I guess they wouldn't have been that early for the Silver Age run, but the time when the team consisted of Rita, Larry, Cliff, and Niles, Steve and Gar was sort of my favorite time when it was the whole family, so to speak.
Okay.
Even though it was pretty crazy family. It was just so, and it was, and I guess part of it to me was I couldn't decipher if it was meant to be funny or dramatic or if was it the style of writing at the time. It's hard to explain, but there was something just weird about it,
yep,
but wonderful at the same time. And there was sort of a melodrama to it that you don't see anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, I've always liked that kind of, yeah, dysfunctional family feel that era had. But particularly when, you know, you see Steve Dayton, you know, obviously trying to woo over Rita, and she's, you know, concerned for Gar's welfare, and then Mentor kind of turns around. He's pretty much horrible all the time to poor old Gar, you know, at every occasion. Even though Mento thinks he's doing the right sort of thing. So
yeah,
that was something that reading your stuff from the Teen Titans Go issues, I really enjoyed seeing that kind of carried across as well. I thought that was brilliant.
Well, what we basically did was take what they started on the show, where they had Rita as sort of the nurturing mother figure and Steve as the disciplinarian father, mm-hmm, and just kind of ran with it. And it made perfect sense in terms of how they tried to structure the family. And then it was, we sort of debated whether or not, you know, Cliff and Larry were uncles or brothers. Like we couldn't figure out how they fit into the, you know, they're kind of too old to be brothers, but at the same time, aging them as uncles kind of made it weird. Why are there two uncles in the house, you know? So we just sort of went with, you know, possible uncle, brother, cousins, sort of, in terms of the dynamic, because really, you know, Beast Boy is very immature, plays pranks on them and so on. And as adult men, they should sort of get over it and not, you know, be chasing him down the street with a wrench or whatever comedy bit we put in. So we just kind of went with that, and we thought it was fun. And to me, it's a perfect setup for their own animated series.
Yeah.
You know, you've defined everybody's roles, and they're a super team, superhero team, but at the same time, there's this dynamic to the group that I think works well in terms of comedy, in terms of drama. So I was hoping that somewhere down the road, Warner Brothers would just figure out that there was a really good formula here. Mm. I don't know if you guys, have seen the DC Nation shorts, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, they were just, one of the first things we talked about when we started doing this show. That was, yeah, like our second episode, we talked all about them. So, yeah.
I love and I hate those because they're basically just teasing us the entire, whatever, three or four. And it's almost, and you know, they go, episode one, this happens. And then they jump to episode seven and yes, you're thinking, oh, did I miss the other six? You go looking for them and they don't exist. So it's like, they just want you to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And even the story itself, it almost feels like a trailer for a bigger story.
Yeah.
Or like a summary of a bigger story, and then they skip ahead. So whoever produced these was obviously thinking that perhaps, you know, there's enough here to expand upon it, and maybe people would sort of clamor for more. But unfortunately, I don't know if people are.
Yeah, well, that was a couple of years ago now, I think, that they released those.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So can I ask a question about Teen Titans Go? Were you frustrated that you couldn't use Niles, that you had to use Mento as the team leader?
No, not really. I like Mento a lot. especially again because of the Silver Age stuff. I remember by the time he returned in that new costume that kind of made him look like an owl, you know, the blue and yellow one.
Yeah, yes.
By the time he returned to the Titans in that costume, I'd already stopped reading that series, but I came back to it because of Mento.
Wow.
And he was kind of a bad guy in that, but it was sort of, you know, he had a brain tumor and made him act strange, and he blamed Beast Boy for the Doom Patrol's demise, and then Raven cures him, and then there's a reunion between, you know, father and son, so to speak. That was that basically, for me, redeemed the entire arc, because I never really saw him as a bad guy. So he became a bad guy from that point on in the DCU. And in the Silver Age Doom Patrol, the 60s Doom Patrol, I kind of thought he was just crazy, not really a bad guy, but kind of like just, you know, he pursues this woman and woos her by becoming a superhero. You know, that's kind of crazy in and of itself right there. Yep. And then they suddenly decide to adopt this shape-shifting boy. And really, I kind of saw him as one of those men who's never had much exposure to children and doesn't really know what to do with them. You know, other than what you might see on TV or in the movies. And if this was in the 60s, so the stuff that he saw on TV in the movies, you know, the dads were very distant and very, you know, they would be the ones that spanked the kids and disciplined the kids and made them, you know, tough and tell them to be, you know, to grow up like real men and all that kind of stuff. Mm. So that's sort of, he's a product of his time, I think, in that era. But I loved it. It was just fun. And then there was sort of the, you know, the opposite side of that would be Rita being more nurturing and so, you know, motherly towards Beast Boy. But to be honest, I didn't really like Beast Boy that much in the 60s Doom Patrol. I kind of saw him as a real brat.
Yes.
So I kind of, I had no sympathy for him if, you know, Mento was mean to him or even negligent. I just kind of thought that the kid deserved it. I never really sympathized with his plight, which was, if you think about it, you know, the poor kid didn't have it easily.
I actually find him more hard to take in the Titans run, actually, in the early Marv Wolfman stuff. He's pretty obnoxious in there.
Yeah, I remember that too. It wasn't cute, right? It was like you said, it was obnoxious. And they only, you know, obviously when the animated series came along, they made him cuter. He was still obnoxious, but because he was cuter and the younger of the group, it kind of made it more palatable, I guess. But yeah, like he's probably my kid's favorite character. Most of the kids that I run into, you know, at conventions or signings, they all love Beast Boy. Everybody cosplays as Beast Boy. You know, male or female, and he's by far the most popular of the Titans. And I suspect if there was ever a Doom Patrol, you know, book or animated series, he'd still be the star. So I can't get around that.
Oh, geez. I don't know how I, as a Robot Man fan, feel about that. But but Paul, you were saying to me earlier that you discovered an interesting fact about the issue that Jay did of the Batman Brave and the Bold comic that featured the Patrol.
Yeah, this, well, there's an episode of the show that has the Doom Patrol in it, but you actually got the comic out about a year before that episode aired. So you did the first take on the Doom Patrol from Batman Brave and the Bold, really?
Yeah. The thing about the Brave and the Bold series that I loved was that, unlike the Titans, when we first started doing the comic series, Teen Titans Go, the first couple of years, we weren't allowed to introduce any new characters or any characters that were not that hadn't appeared on the show or hadn't been approved by the producers. And to get an approval on a character just took too long. So if I had this idea for example, 2 months down the line, I don't know if they would have gotten the approval back before the deadline. So we didn't even bother until we were allowed to just have carte blanche and do whatever we want in terms of introducing the characters. However, on The Brave and the Bold, it was, you know, open season, just whoever you wanted. Wow. So I had if you remember that issue, it opens with the Olympian from Global Guardians.
Yes.
So Global Guardians is another one of those one of those obscure DC groups that I would love to do something with, but I really doubt that I ever will. But anyway, so I put them in there.
You could make the Tasmanian Devil famous again.
Yes, yes. So I put Olympian in there just for fun, and then I knew I wanted to do a Doom Patrol, but my editor at the time suggested paring it down to a Beast Boy Batman story. Mm. So most of the time, you know, Brave and the Bold issues and cartoons, it was Batman plus one character.
Yeah.
But I slid the whole team in there anyway. Yes. I said, all right, fine. It's Beast Boy and Batman, but they're going to rescue the rest of the team. So that's why the story is structured the way it is. But in the end, you know, they realized that I kind of snuck in the whole team. So that's why they all appear on the cover. So originally it was supposed to be Batman and Beast Boy. And then I just kind of snuck in the rest of the team as part of the rescue. So, so that kind of changed their plans a bit.
I love that you have them taking down the Mad Mod, and you didn't, you know, most writers would have gone for a Doom Patrol villain, but you zigged when everyone else zags at that point.
Well, the thing about that is I can't remember exactly what inspired the Mad Mod initially, but I remember thinking, I was trying to think of a good villain, and of course I could have, like you said, I could have gone with a Doom Patrol villain, but I remember thinking something about their costumes. Yes, that's what it was. Jay Bone, the artist of the issue, and I were talking about which costumes we would like to have them in. So whether they would appear in the red and white, or what he used, which was the purple and black ones, or the ones where they kind of had their own, you know, individual looks.
Yeah.
You know, like Larry in the trench coat. And
I love that line. It was so great.
Yeah.
Where he says to Rita, I've been considering your makeover. How do you think I'd look in a trench coat? I was like, yes.
Yeah. We were, you know, this is just Jason Bone and I are both big fans of the Doom Patrol. So we just had so much fun just referring to anything and everything we could for, you know, for the fans and putting little Easter eggs here and there. Mm. So it started with that discussion. What costumes would they be wearing? And then I thought about how the story could be about the costumes, and that led to Mad Mod. It just made sense that he would want to take their costumes or parts of their costumes and redesign some kind of, you know, villainous battle suit or something.
Yeah.
So that's where the idea came from, just a discussion of the costuming. And one regret is that we didn't have more pages because, you know, the Doom Patrol comes in the second or third act, and I wish we had even just a couple more pages to see them in action.
You like hinted that by them seeing Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man on one of the monitors.
Yeah, I did, and I knew, you know what, that was one of the things I knew we had to end on. I wanted to end on a cliffhanger with Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man in there. I knew that, you know, they were going to be getting ready to, you know, go to bed, and then this alarm comes on, you know, they get called away last second to take care of him.
Yeah, that was a very cool touch.
And you notice the closing line there.
Yeah, my greatest adventure.
And yeah. I, you know, you had to do it.
It was brilliant.
I had to just put in all the references and the puns that I could get in there, because, and frankly, that was the last time I got my hands on the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
I think it's a real shame that readers don't realize that there's so much good stuff going on in Johnny DC, and, you know, it's written by people who love the stuff the same way they do. It's not, you know, it's not a niche that's not full of the comic magic that you really want. It's awesome.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's true. I mean, a lot of people sort of write it off because it is intended to be the kids' line. It's intended to be for the younger readers. but, you know, every now and then I'll bump into an older fan who either is a dad or an uncle or something, or an aunt, and they discover it that way. But there's also some guys out there who are just clued in. I'll bet you after this podcast we'll see a bit of a spike in the sales of the of the back issues, because people do, you know, this is the way I operate. I hear about something that I've never considered, and someone will say, oh, there's a Doom Patrol appearance in X. So I'll go look for it.
Which is exactly what happened with me. I think to an extent, Paul as well. I was like, hey, there's these Doom Patrol stories I haven't read. And I was like, let's dive in and read them. So, and yeah, as Paul said, they were a lot of fun. I really enjoyed them. It was great stuff.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, you know, obviously, I think a lot of times, if the writer and the artists are having fun, it really comes across on the page, I think.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's what's happened here, because we just, you know, we love the characters. We had so much fun with them. And as you see, I tried to sneak them in as much as I could. I mean, I try. It was almost an annual thing to put them into the Titans Go book. because that was sort of my secret plan. But because of scheduling and because who the artists were, it didn't quite come out every year. But it's almost, you know, once every 12 issues.
Yeah.
So for those who want to follow along, there's Batman the Brave and the Bold number 7, which came out in late 2009. The next, Teen Titans Go number 28 from 2006. That is a surprise party for Beast Boy being thrown by the Doom Patrol and the Titans, and they're prepping and they're telling stories about Beast Boy. pretty fun. I like the one where he takes Robot Man apart.
That issue, in a way, is kind of would be my blueprint for the miniseries I was mentioning earlier.
Okay.
Of course, it wouldn't be as, you know, goofy and over the top. It would definitely be a lot weirder in terms of, you know, the traditional Doom Patrol kind of stories. So again, it would be about this child growing up in this weird household and then being forced to be a superhero with them, kind of thing, and fighting, you know, these strange.
Yeah,
in alien-like villains, actually including some aliens. Yeah. So that's kind of my blueprint. That issue would sort of be my blueprint for a Beast Boy and the Doom Patrol Wonder Years type of miniseries.
Oh.
Yeah. And I saw that you, in issue 45 of Teen Titans Go, you sort of redid Beast Boy's origin, which sort of ties back into the classic Doom Patrol origin. But that was terrific because he's Beast Boy is sort of telling the story and to a bunch of kids who keep chiming in with these facts well above their age range and experience.
Yeah, so that was basically so I don't know if you guys remember Sarah Sim from the Teen Titans. She was Beast Boy's Cyborg's girlfriend for a time. She worked with a bunch of differently abled kids. So in this story, I had them go on a camping trip with Sarah Sim and a bunch of these kids. And this was one of those issues where we had two short stories. And we decided to do the secret origin of Beast Boy and the secret origin of Cyborg. Mm. Cyborg's story is played a lot straighter. Beast Boy's, I had a lot of fun with it. So it's sort of a campfire story. And he just embellishes his own origin story.
Yeah.
For example, stating that his parents were adventurer archaeologist types like Indiana Jones or Lara Croft. but he makes all these mistakes, like, for example, mentioning there's a chupacabra in the Amazon, and the kids correct him and say, well, the chupacabra is indigenous to Mexico, for example. And the kids, like you're saying, are much smarter than Beast Boy ever will be. So he's embellishing the story as he goes along, and the kids correct him. But eventually we get the quote-unquote real, you know, Beast Boy origin, which has been told before. So I wanted to kind of play with it a little bit and have fun. It's a pretty straight up, standard superhero story, tragedy, transformation and all that. And then superpowers come from that transformation.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have a bit more fun with that. The fun thing is a lot of the readers were surprised because we show Beast Boy as a blonde child and a lot of them had never seen him not green before. Because a lot of the readers were younger. They'd never read the Titans, the original, sort of the new Teen Titans or any of the Doom Patrol books. Actually, we never saw him as other than a Beast Boy in the Doom Patrol, right? If I remember.
I think there may have been, maybe two or three panels where he was essentially a very young child. But I think 99% of the time we've only ever seen him as Beast Boy.
As a green kid.
Green Beast Boy, yeah.
Right. So a lot of kids kind of like that. They were surprised by, that he actually looked different at the time or at one point.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to retell it and just, obviously the Doom Patrol had to be part of it, even though it was only for a couple pages. But I love that there's one panel I can't remember what page it was, but it was probably the second page where we introduced the Doom Patrol, where we see Larry, Rita, Steve, and Cliff sort of all posed in a row. I just love that panel. I wish we could like cut it out and make a poster or something out of it, or maybe a Facebook cover or something.
It's terrific. And issue 53, you sort of do a Freaky Friday story with Mento and Beast Boy with a brain swap.
Yes. Freaky Friday. I just wanted to, you know, it was another one of those short stories. And I just wanted to have something, you know, quick and fun. And Joe Quinones, who drew it, has later, you know, has gone on to bigger and better things.
Yeah.
And I've been begging him for the last, I don't know how many years it's been, almost 10 now, maybe not that long, but I've been trying to get a page from that story from him. And he keeps promising me, but we keep sort of forgetting about it. Then I'd remember and I'd bug him again. So one of these days I'm going to have one of those pages.
Anyway, it's eight years now.
So the basic story is just, you know, Freaky Friday switch between Mento and Beast Boy. And I just thought that would be fun because they're so different. And, you know, it's sort of a classic sort of sitcom trope something they do a lot of in TV and cartoons. And I thought, might as well give it a shot and see. The tricky part was, how do we get them to switch? And I thought that should be a little more fantastic than just both of them wishing that they switch bodies at the same time.
Yeah.
So I went with the helmet and the electric eel coming together, kind of like the Flash origin story, to make them switch.
I love the scene in this where Negative Man scoops up who he thinks is Beast Boy, but yeah, it's Beast Boy's body, but with Steve's brain, and he dumps him on top of this, he drops him from midair on top of this giant alien octopus thing and says, you know, you should turn into an elephant or something before you land so we can take him out.
Right.
And he's kind of like, splat, and he lands on top of this creature, and he's like, what do I do now? You know, nice monster.
Yeah, and I just love the colors of that story. Mm. I think Joe did the colors. I'm not sure. I don't want to miscredit somebody, but I don't know. It was just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I asked for a monster, an alien, a giant alien monster with tentacles. That was my own description. And I said, go for it. And that's what he gave us right there. So
that was great. Yeah.
A lot of fun.
That was terrific stuff. You hope to get back to the Doom Patrol one day, I imagine?
Yes, it would be nice. You know, a miniseries. Mind you, if I ever got my hands... See, I've been doing a lot of my own creator-owned stuff in the last few years. And every now and then, you know, I've gone back to DC a couple times to do some shorter assignments. Mind you, if I ever got back onto any kind of series or miniseries, I'd probably find a way to sneak, if not the whole team, at least one of them in there somewhere, Robot Man or Beast Boy. So it's just one of those things. And probably have the Global Guardians sneak peek as well. And another, my top three obscure DC characters that I would love to somehow play with, include in a story, ideally all three of them in one story would be the best thing ever. Doom Patrol, classic Doom Patrol, so Silver Age Doom Patrol with Beast Boy and Mento. The Global Guardians in some kind of, you know, some kind of formation. It's hard to say which characters to include, but I kind of like the campy, weird costume, kind of verging, and I use this word cautiously, almost verging on racist, like stereotypes. You know, but I just love those costumes. They're just campy and fun. So you have to be careful we don't get into that area. But I just love the classic Global Guardians from the Super Friends era. Mm-hmm. And the last would be the Wonder Twins.
Oh wow!
which Dandy Dio himself has told me would never happen. I remember having a conversation with him, and I said, I'd really like to do a pitch of Wonder Twins. He's like, nope, it's never going to happen, Jay. And I said, but, you know, before I could get my next sentence out, he said, nobody cares about them. And I argued, but that's the point of being a writer. We're supposed to make people care. I mean, who cared about Animal Man before Morrison, you know, did his thing?
Yeah.
You know, that's my job. Give me a shot at making people care about the Wonder Twins. And he basically told me to stop. So,
wow.
So that was the end of that conversation. But you never know. You never say never.
Yeah.
Well, Keith Giffen's doing Sugar and Spike right now. So
exactly. You just never know where you can sneak these guys in. Plus, have you guys seen the current Teen Titans Go cartoon?
Yeah, yeah.
There is an episode with the Wonder Twins that is, if you ask me, the best episode of the entire run that I've seen so far. Have you seen that one?
I've not, no.
No.
Okay, I won't talk too much, but basically, I can't remember what happened, but they kicked Beast Boy off the team. So they need to replace him with a superhero with animal powers. And what ends up
happening... Yes, I have seen this. I have seen this.
They have an audition process. It's like American Idol or whatever. And like Bawana Beast shows up, Vixen shows up briefly, and of course, this sort of spoils it, but Jaina shows up, and she wins the role, wins the job. But the problem is, her brother wasn't part of the audition, but she needs to, you know, to tap fists with him in order to activate her powers. So there's the comedy that ensues there. Plus Beast Boy trying to get back on the team. And I just thought it was brilliant. It was so much fun. You know, not that I would do anything over the top, but there is potential to do something with these guys, you know, with the twins.
Wow.
So those are the top three. Those are the top three obscure-ish DC characters that I would love to play with if I ever got my, if it was entirely my choice.
We pray that day comes.
Like imagine a team or even, you know, some kind of network that included all those characters.
Wow.
It would just be crazy fun and kind of silly. I think so. I mean, you have, you know, Lady Godiva, the Olympian, Jack-o'-lantern, Tasmanian Devil. You know, you need to kind of modernize them a little bit. But even the Super Friends characters, Apache Chief, Samurai, El Dorado, you know, I would do something with those guys. Because, I mean, if I remember correctly, these were some of the earliest comics I ever read. Mm. There used to be a Super Friends comic, and those guys would come in and out of it. You know, it would be a good way to cut, you know, people are talking about diversity more and more these days in comics. You know, you could bring these guys in such a way that doesn't make them look like stereotypes and have fun with it. At least I think so.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's Jay Torres' wish list.
Fantastic. All right, we might move on to the Mailbag of Doom now, if that's okay. So last week on the show, we asked everyone, what are the best comics for kids? So we heard from Cameron Williams at Wasgo on Twitter, and he said, Batman versus Superman, the comic adaptation. So...
I think he's trolling us again there, maybe. We heard from Jeffrey Brown at T Sujigo, and he said Batman Adventures and Mark Waid's Flash Run from the 90s.
Wow. We heard from Astrakis1 on Twitter, who's Milkier Wet Nave Tech, and he said, I will always point parents towards any of the DC books based around the Bruce Timm animated DCU. There's so many great stories there.
Yeah, that was great stuff. Richie O'Hara Beeman at Rickety OB said his kids Aaron and Rory are big fans of Squirrel Girl, great choice, and Lumberjanes. They have good taste.
At Fractures, Frack of the Endless, he said, my daughter loves My Little Pony and the Shanoa Young Wizard of Oz books and Tiny Titans and Superman Family. They're all good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Hero Word Elder at Karthik Kakarala first off asked us a question saying, so I guess Little Doom Patrol isn't a thing yet. Well, not yet. Maybe one day. he said, I still think Help Us Great Warrior works for any age though. I can put my hand up for that one. I'm like, what, 41 almost? And I love that series. He said, I only turned out a bit of a colonialist because of Tintin books, it turns out. Okay.
We heard from Moby1, who's at Shmoby1 on Twitter, and he said, "Owls love Jeff Smith's Bone, and so did the adults in the house. Very few books of mine had that kind of crossover at our place."
Nice. That's a good choice. We heard from friend of the show and previous guest, Martin Gray, at Mark Gray, and he said, "Back then it was Supergirl, Cosmic Adventures in the Eighth Grade, but now it's Scooby-Doo Team-Up." And he provided us with some panels which look like the Scooby gang meeting the Flash, which I had not seen before.
That looks like a really fun comic. Martin Gray's been doing reviews on his blog about it, and it sounds awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. On the Facebook, we heard from Shag, Irredeemable Shag, and he said, "I guess it really depends on when your kids were coming up. In my case, the Marvel Adventures line of books were out when my stepson was the perfect age, from 2005 through 2011. This Kit Fredley imprint from Marvel was great. I especially enjoyed reading Marvel Adventures Spider-Man with him."
Cool.
What about you, Mike? What
do
you
Well, I have to say, because I'm actually going back and reading more of them now, and not just because our guest is still with us, but Teen Titans Go is a lot of fun. So, and like, I'd never read them before, but yeah, get them on Comixology. They're great fun. But I'll also say, anything in that Bruce Timm style. I was a big fan of a series called Adventures in the DC Universe that came out ages ago. And I think that's available still digitally. I hope it is. Because, yeah, it's just got that really cool, fun look to it. And everything's pretty much self-contained, but it's still a lot of fun. So... yeah, stuff like that is what I think would be good for any age, really.
Yeah, my son loves the Rocket Raccoon comics that have been coming out lately.
Okay.
They're very fun. They're very cartoony and, you know, excellent art. Jay, you know a thing or two about comics for kids.
Well, speaking of good comics for kids, I should mention that... you talked about the Teen Titans Go there. They're reprinting in the standard trade paperback editions the entire run. So,
oh, wow.
So far they've reprinted, I want to say, two or three volumes, starting with issue one, of course. And they're going to go through the entire run. So by 2017, 2018, there'll be, I believe, six or seven volumes. So I think the next one is coming out in, I want to say, May.
Okay.
And that's called Heroes on Patrol. And I think that's going to be collecting something like issues 8 to 12 or something. And then the following one will be in September. So that's something to look out for. They'll be, I think you can already pre-order them from your comic shop or from Amazon.com and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Also, if I may, I have a couple of new books coming out from Oni Press. The first one is a six-issue miniseries called The Mighty Zodiac, and it's a fantasy story based on the Chinese Zodiac, so the animals in the Chinese Zodiac. Mm-hmm. So think of like Usagi Yojimbo or Kung Fu Panda, Avatar The Last Airbender. It's sort of a fantasy world with these warriors who have to go after six stars that have fallen out of the sky and bring them back to their master, who is a dragon. Who is ailing and thinks that maybe the stars can cure him of his illness. Meanwhile, an army of rabbits from the moon have come down to stop them because they want to be the dominant force, you know, in this land. So that's the basic setup for the Mighty Zodiac. Again, debuting in April for six issues from Oni Press, and eventually they'll be collected, but you can get the single issues as they come out every month.
Well, I think the first one's out actually next week. So
debuting it at Emerald City.
Emerald City. Okay.
So that's April 6th or something, 7th. And I'm going to do a signing at my local shop before I leave for Seattle. But yeah, so it starts next week. You'll be able to get it, again, from your store, from Comixology. If you have trouble getting the singles, you know, there'll be a collection probably within the next 6 to 8 months.
Yeah. Just personally, when I found out about this new book of yours and I saw the preview art, and I'm pretty sure they're ninja rabbits, if I remember correctly. I think at that point I was like, I must have this. I must talk to Jay. This looks awesome.
Well, thank you. So, the artist is Corinne Howell, who's just coming off of the Batmite miniseries at DC.
Okay.
And she's also working on a Transformers project of some sort at IDW. Mm-hmm. And somebody mentioned the Lumberjanes earlier. Marta Laiho is our colorist, who's the colorist of Lumberjanes.
Oh, wow.
And she's brilliant. She's bringing something really special to the book. If you look at the online previews that we've put out so far, you'll see just how great her work is. Both Corinne and Marta have been so much fun to work with, and we're so excited to get this book out there finally.
Yeah, it looks so cool. Yeah, just what I've read. I've read some interviews you guys have done about the series, and I was like, this sounds just so much like awesome fun, and you know, the big exciting quests, and you know, the disparate team members being brought together on a big journey, and I was like, this is exactly up my alley. You know, it just sounds and looks so cool from what I've seen so far. So I hope everyone listening to this goes and checks it out. You know,
the Mighty Zodiac, is that right? Yeah.
Yes, the Mighty Zodiac from Oni Press.
Yeah. I've already pre-ordered it, so you know you've got at least one from me. So.
I'm just looking at some art now; it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's looking. You know, we're looking very optimistically at this. The feedback has been great. We've got some pretty decent advanced orders, getting some good buzz. So I think it'll do well. You know, knock wood, and I think people will enjoy it.
Mm.
At least I hope they do. I read it to my kids. My kids are 5 and 7.
Uh-huh.
I read them the first issue and shown them artwork from the second, and they're asking for more, so that's a good sign. You know, I've shown them stuff in the past, and they're like, okay, thanks, Dad. You know, but this time they're asking, when's it coming out? And my 8-year-old wants to share it with some of his classmates. So that's a good sign, I think.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Wow.
Now, also, if I can, I have another book from me coming out in May. It's a one-shot graphic novella, if you will, mm-hmm. 40 pages for a younger set, even younger than The Mighty Zodiac. The Mighty Zodiac I kind of see as an all-ages book, kind of like a Pixar movie. So yeah. You don't have to be a kid or you know, the young and the young at heart, as we say. So if you appreciate Pixar movies, you know, as an adult, you'll probably like this as well, because it's not skewed that young. It's not skewed too old. It's sort of right down the middle for everybody. Yeah. So the next book is called The Brobots, The Robots Who Are Brothers, hence Brobots. Now that skews younger for sure. You know, for kids who are just starting to learn how to read or need to be read to, it's that kind of a fun book.
Okay.
And it's about three robot brothers who take on a giant kaiju in their city. Which is called Brotown, of course.
Right.
And it's just a lot of fun. There's a fairy tale twist in it. And so that comes out in May. It's like our little hardcover for kids. And hopefully people will check it out. Again, there's some stuff online you can have a peep at. Scotty Young likes it. And his kid Baxter also likes it, if that's any good investment there. And my 5-year-old loves it. We got an advanced copy, and I haven't seen it since it came in the mail. But I have seen him reading it, so I think that's another pretty good endorsement. Yeah. So if you guys are looking for good kids material, check out Brobots from Oni Press in May.
Excellent. Well, look, we'll definitely put some links up to both those books so people can check them out as well. I'm really excited for the stuff you've got coming out, Jay. It looks and sounds a lot of fun, which is what I need more personally in the comics that I'm reading. I mean, as much as I love superheroes, occasionally you want something that's not all grim and gritty, and you know.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm just looking through it. It looks like it reminds me of sort of a robot version of Adventure Time.
Yeah, there's a bit of that flavor there, because there is a, like I said, a fairy tale twist, and the artist of the book, Sean Dove, does have that similar sensibility. It's kind of got that Cartoon Network, look to it, right? And it's a lot of fun. And he does so many fun things in the book that, you know, I don't want to spoil, because I don't want to spoil. There's a fun twist in the story, and I don't want to spoil that. But if you like robots, you like giant monsters, you know, fairy tales, Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And who doesn't? And I'll warn you now that if you read this to your kids, you might have to live with them calling each other bro from here on, because that seems to have been sort of an unplanned result of reading this book to children. They go around calling each other bro.
Wow.
Which I did not plan, but right. It's happened.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, so I'll definitely check out Mighty Zodiac. The minute I saw that, I was like, yep, we have to have you on the show to talk about it. And I pre-ordered it straight away at my shop. I was it looks so much fun. And yeah, we'll definitely send out links for that and BroBots as well, so that we can get all our listeners to check it out as well.
Yes, and don't forget the Titans trades, because at some point we'll catch up to the Doom Patrol issues.
Ah, of course.
My son's got one of the original prints, which has the issue 28 in it. So, yeah, that was an oversized one originally. So it's good that they're coming back again.
Cool.
Yeah, there's been a demand for it, which is great. And retailers wanted to see them in the standard format, which was the the regular size trades.
Yeah.
So that's great. And people have been asking for the entire run to be reprinted since the series ended, and finally they come around to it 6 years later, 7 years later.
That's just normal for DC, though, isn't it? They take forever to reprint anything.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is there's still interest, later on, so it's good.
Yeah. Maybe one day they'll do really big, thick trades of them as well.
Yeah.
Maybe an omnibus, maybe. We'll see.
It'd be fun if they could collect... I don't know if there's enough material there, but if they collect all the DP appearances and just do like a Teen Titans Go Spotlight Doom Patrol book and then engage public interest that way and see what, maybe there's interest for a book of that sort. I don't know.
Yeah, we've got a bit of a wish list for a Doom Patrol digital first series, which all the creators who want to get their Doom Patrol story out could do a one-shot here and there, and it could be set in the 60s or... whatever version
I like that idea. Because there's a lot of people who I would like to see, their take on the Doom Patrol, even if it's just for one story.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd all love to see what Jeff Parker could do, or Gabriel Hardman, or Chris Sabella.
I'd love to see Darwin Cook.
Yeah.
Wow.
Darwin Cook, and, he would write and draw his own, hopefully. But also, I was flipping through Matt Fraction and Mike Allred's Fantastic Four. And was thinking, that would be a good team. And if not Fraction and Allred, then maybe Dan Slott and Allred. I don't know if you guys have read the Silver Surfer that they're doing. That's fantastic.
I've read a bit of it, yeah. Yeah.
I think Mike Allred Doom Patrol would just be kind of really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And also... I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jay Stevens. He's a buddy of mine from here, from Toronto area. He did Atomic City Tales and Land of Nod.
Okay.
He was a creator of Secret Saturdays, the cartoon.
Right, yes.
So he's also got that sort of weird retro thing going on that I think would be fun on a Doom Patrol story.
Yeah, I've seen a few episodes of Secret Saturdays. Yeah, I can definitely see the linkage there between them and the Patrol now, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So those would be like my top five or so to do. I mean, not counting myself, of course. Those guys would be I would love to see them on something like that.
And of course, the Beast Boy Wonder Years story from yourself, as you said. That would be awesome.
Yes, I that would be awesome indeed. At least I think so.
Yeah. No, you've got fans here already, so.
I'll tell them. I've pre-sold two copies at least. So can we get on that?
Yeah, come on, Dan DiDio. Jeez, honestly.
I know the trick now is not to mention the Wonder Twins. And that won't get me kicked out of the office or out of the meeting.
Yeah, yeah. We have to learn these things the hard way, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well, we might wrap things up there. So thanks for coming on, Jay. It's fantastic looking back at what you did with the Doom Patrol and looking ahead to your new projects. So if anyone wants to get in touch with us, you can get in touch on Twitter at WFDpod, and we'll be putting up some stuff from Jay Torres's comics there, so you can see what he's done with the Doom Patrol and maybe a bit of previews of his upcoming things. You send us an email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. The Facebook page is always there. And what's on the show next week, Mike?
Next week, we are looking at issues 13 to 14 from Volume 2. So back to the Kupperberg-Larsen stuff.
Ah, I know this. This is when Power Girl comes in, isn't it?
Ah, interesting. Cool. And what's our question of the week for next week, Paul?
We're asking everyone, who's a villain who needs a comeback? So someone you haven't seen for a while? Someone you want to see again?
It's too many choices. Too many choices.
I've got the Mad Mod on my brain now.
Cool. Well, we'll sign off there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Jay Torres, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been great chatting with you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, guys. Yeah,
and honestly, all the best of success with Mighty Zodiac and Brobots. So, you know, thanks, and yeah, much. We'll definitely put those links out there. And so that's it for Waiting for Doom this week. We'll catch you all again next time.
Thanks, everyone.
When I say I want, you say pie. I want
pie.
I want
pie. When I say yummy, you say pie. Yummy.
Pie.
Yummy.
Pie. Apple.
Rhubarb.
Peach or
pear.
Any kind.
We don't care.